tax the rich, feed the poor, tell there are no rich no more. I love to change the world, but I don't know what to do. So I
got to leave it up to you in this crazy old world, changing quicker than we can keep up with it. That's what we talk about, is trying to help you remove yourself from it, at least somehow, some way. Welcome, Sunday evening Radio Ranch RBN edition here, and trying to fill in and fill the shoes of Ralph Winter out and the room that real Ralph built in the house that John built. So Roger Sales, your host, and I look forward to this show weekly, and I'm glad to have you all out there listening, and I'm wanting to talk to you. So as is our habit here, I want to answer questions and be able to converse with you guys and get some of this very complex things to people straightened out in your mind, because really it's pretty simple, but on the surface, conceptually, underneath there's an awful lot of complexity, and I think we can help people clear that up. So I'm going to certainly invite you to call in if you want to do the social intercourse trip here, and that's 512-248-8252. I'll repeat it again a little slower for those of you who don't have this memorized. 512 area code, 248 prefix, 8252 suffix, and we can yak. But until we get a few people lined up and stuff here, I'd like to go into a little bit of housekeeping for a short. We've just started on our regular weekday show that is streamed live on the Euro Folk Radio Network, 11 to 1 Eastern. I added an extra day just because I didn't have enough to do and I was bored on Saturdays. And then, of course, there's a lot of people that I'd like to communicate with verbally instead of through email. And a lot of, I guess there's some folks that still have jobs and the conflicts and whatnot. So we opened up a Saturday show so that those people could interact and appear live over there on our Jitsi platform that we use as our audio part of this. Okay, somebody's calling in already. Just hold on for a second because I want to get this out of the way. And what has happened the last 2 weeks, first one we had, I didn't have a chance to announce it here. So I did last week one time, and then we had our second show yesterday. And what those two programs have turned into is really good teaching platforms. And I often tell people, not often, I constantly tell people, when you get into this, your freedom's in learning the information, okay? Internalizing, having command of it, being able to have it be the start of your re-empowerment, back under God's laws, which these Edomites have stolen their birthright back and cheated us out of for a lifetime. So you're getting that back, and you don't start that empowerment process without the knowledge. Plus, you don't have a way to belligerently defend your position to people if you don't have the knowledge. And you can't help talk to other people and explain it to people and help spread our message and strengthen our ranks, again, unless you have the knowledge and understanding. And that doesn't mean just listening to a presentation. Oh, I've listened to two or three of your presentations. Yeah, man, I've learned it. No, you hadn't, because the presentations are the conceptual upside of it, and it's the high points, all right? And if you wanted to use this analogy, it's the 10% of the iceberg that you see above the water. The 90% is all of the mechanizations and stuff that you really understand, that's the stuff we really need taught. Because even the law type stuff isn't taught in our law schools anymore, and hadn't been for as near as I can tell, 100 years, okay? And they've been controlling the umbrella organization that oversees all the American colleges and universities. It's called the American Association of Colleges and Law Colleges and Law Schools, okay? And we've got absolute proof that they were controlling that 100 years ago, just about 90, 96 or something, to the point where they could change the annual convention to Chicago on New Year's Eve so that this little Jew, Jacob Frank, from the Department of Agriculture could get up and tell a very reduced crowd there at that annual convention what was going on in a speech called Experimental Jurisprudence and the New Deal. you know, they've got to tell us what they're doing. Well, they did that. Jacob Frank delivered the speech to a very reduced American Association of Law Schools audience because they moved it to Chicago on New Year's Eve. Okay, so if they can do that, you know, they've been in control of the curriculum for law schools, and a lot of this very important stuff that I was fortunate enough to learn because I had John W. Benson as a law teacher and studied law his whole life and didn't go to law school. So those are the kind of things, and I wanted to go over that here early to tell you that if you want to listen to some of that kind of stuff, the first two Saturday shows, yesterday the 20th and I guess the 13th, especially yesterday, turned into an extremely good teaching show, and it was all about some of the big misconceptions in our patriot movement that, you know, that persons are only corporations and all that stuff, and how do you take and go back to, there's a formula that runs the world, R plus D equals R. Very simple, rights plus duties equal remedies. But you, until you understand that formula and how it plays on things like who's a legal person and other stuff, you don't have the underpinnings of all this. All you've got is the tip of the iceberg there. So I wanted to encourage any of you that are looking for additional knowledge here to go tap in, and the archives are over at castbox.fm, like casting a rod, casting or cast net, castbox.fm, frequency modulation, and in the search box put Radio Ranch, two words this time, up there, and you'll get almost 4 years of archives. I guess when we get to December, nearly part of December is where we set that up about 4 years ago. So there's more than enough to listen to, and there's an awful lot of lessons in there. But these two particular Saturday shows, and I hope to continue that on Saturday, are very important. Okay, so anyway, just wanted to get that out of the way. Learn the material. Your freedom's in the material. Our chance to rebuild this thing when these idiots crash it, because it's crashing on them. You can see it in front of us. They're in desperation, running around chasing their tails. They're being exposed at every vector of their agenda. These guys can do an awful lot, but they got to do it in secret. And they can't do it when it's out in the open and everything's coming out in the open, and they got to be desperate. I mean, you can see the desperate moves of desperate men all over the place. That raid on Mar-a-Lago was total desperation. Okay, so anyway, go back if you want to. If you don't want to, don't. I don't care. Okay, it's your knowledge. I care from the respect that I see one of the real important functions we do here, and the reason I try and always guide people to learn the information is not only the things I mentioned, but this is the kind of information we're going to need to consider when things are getting rebuilt. Okay, that's the important part right there. That, your command of the information, your ability to be a belligerent claimant, your ability to help spread it and tell those who want to listen or are interested. And the more you do that, the more you're going to be in command of the information. And the more you're in command of the information, the more re-empowered you are. Okay, there's a method to the madness here. So anyway, wanted to get that out of the way. Got a couple of people lined up. I think, Sam, if you got somebody, who we got there first, my friend? Steve in Oregon. Hi, Steve.
Hey, thanks, Roger. You had a heck of a show yesterday. I really appreciate it.
That was a really good program, okay? And I don't do anything scripted. Everything's spontaneous. I don't have pieces of paper in front of me. I got it all in my head because I know this stuff cold.
Yes, and I enjoy it thoroughly. And I have all kinds of questions. And I know you have other callers, so you just cut me off.
Well, no. Steve, we just got started. There's one guy behind you. Let's roll.
Okay. You know, I need you to explain a little bit more about what do you mean by co-equal political statuses.
I can tell you. All right. Okay. Well, you want me to answer that, or you want to give me some more explanation?
No. Well.
Okay. Well, I think it's instructive. I think it's instructive to go back and show people how that happened, more than just tell you it happened. Okay.
Okay.
So we get these creeps. They draw up a 13th and a 14th Amendment. Then they get a civil war started. Not to free the slaves, but in order to enslave everybody with these two amendments they got ready to run in on us. They get those into the Constitution, and then that gives us secondary political status. There was, for 90 years or so, there was a political status in the country, but it was the original state citizen. Okay. And there was no federal citizenship. It was a big void. Okay. And there was a lot of discussion. If you go back and read and you want to look into this a little deeper, you can go back to the Slaughterhouse Cases, which was the first case decided on the 14th Amendment, 3 years after the amendment was supposedly ratified anyway. And they talk in there about this problem. And they say, you know, it was exacerbated by the Dred Scott decision. Because the Dred Scott decision said a black man could not be a citizen of the United States of America, no, anything short of a passage of an amendment to the Constitution. That's what the 14th Amendment was. But it was not only pertaining to black slaves, because there in D.C., where they had no political status, the people in D.C. and the territories that had been born and raised in D.C. were not citizens of the nation because there was no basis. There was no national citizenship on the federal side. There was a void. And it was, if you were a state citizen, you were a citizen of the United States of America, or a, get this, Steve, or a national citizen. So you see where they got the term?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we get the 14th Amendment passed. Now we got two political statuses. We've got a federal status that's now, at least by popular knowledge, assigned to the blacks. But if you go back and look at that and think about it, there had to be whites and other ethnicities that were born in D.C. and the territories, and it affected them too, but from that point on, it was always identified to the black man, okay, which I find very interesting. There's a big void there, and I've never seen anything written about the people that weren't black that were affected by the federal citizenship. In other words, the Jim Crow laws brought in the black and the white, black restrooms, white restrooms, etc. Well, where did the people that weren't black that had been born and raised in D.C. and the territories, which bathroom did they use? Okay, you with me? All right.
Yep.
So we go on, and 25 years of that into that, a group of a progressive newspaper out of New Orleans, and I don't know the name of the newspaper, but they had a long reach and evidently quite a readership, and they put out a call for contributions and donations because they wanted to challenge the Jim Crow laws. Okay, and so they did. They raised $3,000 in the 1890s. That's pretty good bit of change back then, I'm sure. And they went out and they found a victim. They had to hunt for him because he was 9/10 white. And his name was Plessy, P-L-E-S-S-Y. And the case was in 1894. And it's styled, and I encourage people to go read. This is a really interesting case, Plessy, okay? Plessy v. Ferguson. P-L-E-S-S-Y, Plessy B. Ferguson. So they went out and found Plessy, and they found a guy intentionally that was 9/10 white. He was 1/10 black. And it was on a railroad that was only inside the state of Louisiana, so it had no federal jurisdiction. They chose that too. So they went and put Plessy on a railroad car there at the station. They called all the other newspapers to come and cover it. They hired the detectives to arrest him. And when they went and put Plessy on the white-only railroad car, and then they arrested him. Well, they take the case to court, state court in Louisiana, and the first judge they were up against ruled against them, and that was Ferguson. So they enjoined Ferguson in the case, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court came back. You know, they have these little thumbnail descriptions, Steve? And so the thumbnail description for Plessy v. Ferguson is separate but equal. Okay, so, right. You know, the logical person that reads that doesn't understand what we're talking about here goes, well, hold it. They had to use separate facilities. How can they be equal? Which doesn't make any sense on the surface. But what you don't understand is the reason they were equal, they both had a political status, although the political statuses were not equal. One got their rights from God, the other got their rights from the federal government, civil rights. So they had that impediment for a long time. And if you ever hear what overturned that case was the final thing they did in totally securing their agenda here was they had to get that equality level. And the way they did that was about 60 years later in 1954 with a case that everybody knows about called Brown versus Board of Education. I say everybody. That they started. So now what we understand is the way these guys work. So they went in intentionally in a southern town, Little Rock and other settled towns. Little Rock was the one that centered around because the case came out of there. And they'd take the white kids from the upper-level neighborhood and ship them to the black schools and vice versa, and everybody was hot, okay? And so that went to the Supreme Court. Incidentally, the NAACP was the plaintiffs here, okay? And the attorney for the NAACP was Thurgood Marshall, who was later appointed to the court, obviously because of his good work, okay? And so when Brown comes back, the thumbnail for Brown is equal in the classroom, equal in the society. Well, that's where they equaled out Plessy and Ferguson. So they made them the same in Brown versus Education, but they fed us the line on the secondary status. Equal in the classroom, equal in the society. Well, now see, they could have said equal in the white country club, equal in the society, because now the two statuses are equal. Plessy is overturned and overcome, and that's how we're equal. Now, the important thing here is not only to understand that, I can show you in a government document, Steve, okay? The important thing is not only to understand that, but to understand what was the final move they made after that. Have you heard me talk about this before?
A little bit, but what was it?
60 days. When I first started, see, I used to think they were separate and they were trapping us in the bottom one with a trap door. And I knew you could get out, but I didn't realize they were equal till I saw that State Department policy document where it says all U.S. citizens are U.S. nationals. Then I understood what they did. Okay, but 60 days later, after they made us all equal, 60 days to the day, they put the 1954 Internal Revenue Code in place, and we've been under it ever since. So if you want to look at the pyramid game and the Freemason game of building the pyramid and the capstone, Brown v. Board completed the pyramid. The 1954 Internal Revenue Code was the capstone. And that's why they come in and ask you, are you a citizen of the United States? They don't ask you. Maybe on some forms they'll say, or a national. But very rarely when you get the two questions, do you ever have national mentioned? It's always, are you a citizen of the United States? Are you a resident? And you sign something, okay? And so what they're doing in the top level of fraud, I mean, there's multi levers of fraud underneath. Multi, 7, 8, 10, hell, it depends on which incident you want to put in the fraud category, really. But the first level of fraud is lack of full disclosure. See, they don't ask you, are you a citizen of the United States or a national? They just ask you, are you a citizen of the United States? And so they have got a legal liability from lack of full disclosure. Once you open up that fraud, then all the others are listed underneath. Does that help you?
Right. Yeah, it does. And I want to point out that the State Department statement about all U.S. citizens are nationals, it doesn't say all nationals are U.S. citizens. Does
well, it? They're not. They're not. It does after that because they're talking about non-citizen nationals. That's another trip all you people fall into. Sheldon fell into it last week. Sheldon from Washington calls in here. He's going, well, I just got my passport. It doesn't have this stamp in there. And I looked on Wikipedia and it shows it. This person is not a citizen of the United States. Those are only Samoans, American Samoans, and a very small island out in the Pacific called Swains Island, which I think in the last census had 36 people on it. Okay, we got an interruption here, a little bit of commercial activity, Scott. Hold on, we'll be back. Sam's wanting to get a paycheck or something.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com.
Yeah, all right. Let's see if we can get back to business here. I have to grin. Susanna's Secret is one of our students, Cody. Susanna happens to be Ecuadorian, and Cody married her, and she's a petroleum engineer and has a beautiful home right down here, not too far from where I'm sitting right now, and we know each other personally. And actually, it's from my show. And him listening and us talking about Thieves Oil, that they went off and started this whole line of oils. So they're very good. I've got some here. I used it on my foot the other night, just in the last couple of days, actually. So that's a good product, and you did a good job on the spot, Cody. So back to Scott here. Scott, did we get Steven. You addressed?
Steven,
I'm sorry. Steven, did we get you addressed?
You can call me Sketch.
You're going to really get me confused. Go ahead.
That's all right. I'll maybe if I keep calling, I'll say Sketch.
Okay.
Yesterday, you were talking about the Johns Hopkins historical jurisprudence, and it's not historic. It's historic sizing jurisprudence, I think.
Okay. All right. I thought it was historical. But anyway, it's a book over there, and what Sketch here is talking about for the audience.
Johns Hopkins behind a paywall, too.
I don't have any paywalls on my websites. Okay.
No. The Johns Hopkins website.
I don't know about that. That's a link to the book. The book's out there. It's downloadable. Yeah. And the reason it's important, you know, I keep saying learn the information. Well, this is one of those areas people just don't understand is the UCC. and its origin is in Babylon, okay? And it originally is the Babylon Merchant Code. It was originated evidently in Samaria with the Sumerians, but it was perfected in Babylon, okay? And this book was written in the 1930s, and I thought the title of it was Historical Jurisprudence. Anyway, it's about the whole history of jurisprudence, and the first 90 pages of that book is on the Babylonian Merchant Code, and it's just incredibly important information for you to understand, because we're under the UCC. We're not under any admiralty law. We're not under any maritime law. We're under the Uniform Commercial Code. Hell, the Bible refers to them as the merchants of the earth. How many times? Incalculable. The merchants of the earth. The merchants of the earth. Well, what law do you think the merchants of the earth use? I mean, come on.
Right. Okay, one more question. Has anybody requested that their passports or name be spelled in proper English, not dog Latin?
You mean not in all capital letters?
Right.
I don't think it's important, honestly, but if you want to go ahead and beat your head against that wall, you can do it if that's important to you. Important is what papers you have in the possession of the secretary. We know that from an 1835 Supreme Court case that's still good law almost 200 years later. Okay. And if you understand the administrative state, which we can go into and explain to people, it was built up after the bankruptcy because that's when they changed the system and had a whole bunch of serfs that the administrative state has authority over. The reason we didn't have an administrative state before the bankruptcy is there weren't any serfs or a bunch of free people. Okay. So the administrative state has built up since March the 9th of 1933 because it had a whole new population of these people in servitude that didn't know it, that they could make bureaucratic, unelected, man-made laws and enforce them on. That's what we're dealing with. That's the deep state today. That's what all the problems Trump had. You can't get rid of these bureaucrats. You know, I was thinking about this sketch just in the last 24 hours after that show. One of the real instructive books that was real, I'm sorry I didn't know more when I read it, and I haven't gone back and reread it, and is a book called The 31 Collective Speeches of Congressman Lewis T. McFadden. Have you ever heard me reference that book?
No, I've watched some of his YouTube videos.
Well, he's been dead for a long time, so I don't know if you've watched any of his videos.
His speeches.
He was fantastic. One of the greatest statesmen our country's probably ever produced, really. And his talks, and these are out of the congressional record. You know, they didn't have special orders of TV cameras back then. And he was the chairman of the House Banking Committee, which they don't have anymore, and had been from the first time he was elected because he was a former banker. And so he really understood their moves and the behind the scenes. And so somebody went through the congressional record and pulled 31 of his speeches between 1931 and 1933 before they killed him on the fourth attempt. Okay. And it's really important because of his background, because of his knowledge and understanding, to go through those speeches and read it. And there's some real jewels in there. Okay. But I remember one of the things he said in one of his speeches was, back in that time frame now, he said they control every important office in Washington. That was in the 30s. Right. Well, how effective do you think their control is now?
Yep.
Okay. I tell you, I got to hand it to McFadden. There's three instances of important people that saw what was going on, but they, unfortunately, unlike us, didn't know the end game. Okay. The first two were justices on the Supreme Court, John Harlan, the great dissenter, and the Chief Justice Fuller, who 2 years after Plessy, they heard a case called U.S. versus Wong Kim Ark. It was in 1896. And it was on the 14th Amendment citizenship. You remember when Obama's birth certificate was being challenged? This is the case everybody used. They all used U.S. versus Wong Kim Ark because that is the preeminent Supreme Court case in the history of our country on all these issues of citizenship, denizenship, all that kind of stuff, okay? And obviously, Wong Kim Ark was not black,
All right. So in the dissenting opinion, not the majority, the dissenting opinion, both Harlan and Fuller are in on that dissent. And they come out and say, well, if the rule, you know, they're talking about the 14th Amendment, they say this is the relationship between a liege man and a liege lord. It's a relationship that's unbending by time or place. And they go through a little bit of this feudal language there. And then they go, this was brought into our country with the 14th Amendment just as England was being relieved of its inconvenience. So they saw that it was the feudal system. But they didn't understand what the end game was totally. Now, McFadden, in one of McFadden's speeches, he says they're building a Machiavellian feudal system. He had it. Okay?
Yeah. He must have read the letter to Wilson from Colonel House.
Well, could have. I mean, it's right in there. You know, House says we'll make them sureties by utilizing the ancient pledge. Well, what's the ancient pledge? That's the oath of fealty. And that's what they put you in, is that voluntary oath of fealty relationship where it goes from father to son to father to daughter, whatever. It's generational and it's silent. It's a contract. Whoever initiated it made it, but that doesn't mean you can't get out of it. One of its little wrinkles. All right, another spot break. Hold on, Sketch. We'll get you on the back end.
All right.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Well, I guess that means we'll come back in after the kosher app commercial. These guys have got more scam than Carter's got liver pills, man. I'm telling you. How you doing, Sketch? We're back. What can we do? Answer for you, or whatever.
Yeah, was that case you were talking about? Juan Kim Ark, is that ARK?
Yes, Wong, W-O-N-G, second K-I-M Ark. It's a very interesting case. Okay, obviously he's Chinese. All right, and here's the setup to that case. Wong Kim Ark's parents came over in the swath of Chinese that came over in the 1800s, okay? You know, it helped build the railroads and all that stuff, and they mostly centered around San Francisco. And so he went back to China to visit his grandparents, and he came back, and they let him in. And a few years later, he went back, and the resentment against the Chinese had built up so much in that period of time that when he came back, they wouldn't let him back in. Although he was a 14th Amendment citizen under the 14th Amendment, okay? And so that was when a lot of Chinese were being persecuted. There was a lot of backlash on them. And so the only outlet that they had was to take things to the courts. And so there was over, from what I've heard, there was a whole special they did on PBS around Wong Kim Ark here, I don't know, 20-something years ago. And we found out a lot about it that we didn't know. And one of them was the Chinese, the only way they had to fight back was to file court cases. And they were filing so many court cases, it was clogging up the courts.
And so one case, they let it go through, and it got to the, it got up to the Supreme Court, and that was Wong Kim Ark. And they discuss all these really, really important things around citizenship, denizenship, etc. And yeah, Wong Kim Ark was 14th Amendment citizen. Okay. And now what they really technically did was they took the 14th Amendment and made a superstructure where it included everybody. It wasn't just blacks anymore. Now it's Mexican peons, Chinese coolies, whatever. And, oh, by the way, eventually all the white people, too.
Wow. All right.
Yeah, yeah, you can see the progression of this. It's really interesting to go back to those cases, and I know it's kind of a pain to read Supreme Court cases, but these are really important cases.
Well, like you said, you've got to know the material if you're going to do this. So I appreciate it. I have one last question.
All right.
And I'm asking for a suggestion. I know you've talked about Social Security before, and I think you mentioned disability you didn't know. But would you suggest maybe I'm on disability, and I was wondering if I should possibly send an affidavit to them just letting them know, or should I wait for them to come after me?
I would not poke that bear. In other words, if you want to file an affidavit with the Secretary of State, then that's fine. But
yeah, I've done that.
If you're not just getting straight Social Security and you're getting these other things that they could probably accurately classify as a benefit, and right. You know, keep in mind now, I mean, I don't have all the answers to all these intricate questions, okay? I can surmise.
Well, I know that.
And I would tell you and the audience, again, especially for you doubters out there, okay, or you people that want to personally attack me, you know, for whatever reason, I've been helping people understand and do this for 11 and a half years now, okay? That's not a short period of time. That's a long time, okay? And never – I don't know who all's filed this paperwork. Most of the people, by large, don't ever contact me. They just do it. You know, and we've had evidence of that because we had first show I did. Here's a lady from West Virginia. Oh, I did that 10 years ago. Well, I'd never talked to her before, you know, and so I don't have any idea who's filed the paperwork or in what form they've done it or even if they filed it correctly. But I do know this.
Right.
If any of them had any problems directly because they filed it, they'd find a way to get a hold of me. And I've never had one call in 11 and a half years from any person that had any problems in their life from filing this paperwork. That doesn't mean that that might not happen tomorrow, okay? But up to this point, that's a pretty damn good long-term unblemished track record to me. I'll let you make your
own. That's a good track record in my book. That's a good track record in my book. And this is Sketch signing off. Appreciate your...
Okay, well, hold on. Before you sign off, Sketch, they're scared as hell of this. And one of the reasons something like that might not happen is they don't even want to take the chance of going after somebody and then them having an opportunity to bring this into some type of public forum. That's the one thing they don't want. You know, if they didn't mind that, I mean, I get on the radio, look, you son of a bitches, I hate you. Okay, I had Southern Poverty Law Center, Southern Sodomy Pedophile Larceny Center is what I call them, ADL, all these, I hate your effing guts, okay? Put me on your hate list. I hate you. They'll never do it.
Right, I'm there right there with you, and I'll also include the AMA, you know, the Fletcher Report and what happened in medical establishment.
Yeah, I understand. As McFadden said, they've taken over every key office in Washington almost 100 years ago.
All right.
Unfortunately. We got to rout them out, man. We got to rout out that den of vipers. Thanks, Sketch.
Blessings.
Keep studying, buddy. Igualmente.
I will.
Who's next, Sam? Dale in Oklahoma. Hi, Dale.
It's Joe. Roger.
It's
Roger,
Joe.
This
well,
is Joe from Oklahoma.
It's not Joe Dale, is it?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
All right.
I've talked to you on a couple of times.
Right.
I'm the one that brought up Dr. Eugene Schroeder, Warren Emergency Powers.
Correct. You know him, right? You got a connection to him?
Yes, directly. And I'm I'm pushing he and Ed Petrosky to try to get that Warren Emergency Powers book republished.
You should. It's very topical now, probably more so than it was when it was published originally.
I'm pushing on Ed real hard. He's one that has a few remaining books that are outstanding that he won't turn loose of.
But, well, you know, here today, back when they did that, we didn't have all this self-publishing stuff on the web.
I mean, it's not investing in
10,000 copies you got to keep in your garage and hope they sell, okay? I mean, I will give him the guy that we use. We had a very interesting relationship with our publisher. the fellow that set all this up originated this, and I didn't even know any of it, okay? We only found out afterwards. Is an organization down out of Scottsdale, Arizona, and it's called The Book Patch. thebookpatch.com. And we ended up putting our books there. John Benson's I'm glad you mentioned this. I can promote this a little bit. John Benson's book on taxation is there, and we're about to publish a new old book there ourselves. It's in process right now. And you know, I'm ashamed to say, Joe, I'd forgotten about this totally. John and Glenn wrote a book 30 years ago when I was still in that 6 months of being their student that they were teaching. And they did a contest among all the students as to who could come up with a name for it. And one of the guys came up with United Slaves of America. Pretty good title. And so they, back then, you had to get a bunch of boxes, you know, books printed and this, that, and the other. And, I mean, I'd totally forgotten about it, really, until somebody found it as a used book on the Internet and bought it, paid almost $200 for it. Okay, and we've gotten that. One of my listeners works at a law firm with real high-end scanners, and he scanned everything, and the person that's putting it up on the book patch is in the process of doing that right now, and we're going to offer it. I'd like to do it at a discounted price because it's important background information. It doesn't have anything that we cover on this more newer stuff with the Secretary of State and all that. They just didn't know that back then. But it's a really, really good book on the tax system and all of this feudal system and all this back underground legal stuff that we do talk about. And I'm anxious to get it out there, probably $15 or something. And I'd like to get in there some quantity discounts where you could get a better price for 10 and a better price for 25. And so that you people can get those out, and maybe you got a local patriot group started. Our biggest, most active patriot group in the country is in Flathead County, Montana. And one of my students is for about, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 months, him and his wife been working on this, and they got 40, 50 people showing up every week, okay, in one county. Now, man, I'll tell you what, that affords an awful lot of options down the line when you got that kind of strength in one area. And I tip my hat to Gary for all the good work he and Gina have done up there. And I'm going to speak to that group, actually, tomorrow night. So I'm excited about that. They're doing a real good job. But see, if we could get that kind of penetration in a whole bunch of counties around the country, it gives us incredible options. Here's one. They may could investigate pulling Flathead County out of Montana and forming their own state. There's precedent for that with West Virginia. After the Civil War, they pulled one county out of Virginia and made West Virginia. Do you know that?
I remember hearing you say that, and that really, really rang a bell with me.
Well, let me tell you how that applies. Just a couple of years ago when they had that blue tick Democrat in up there as a governor that was causing so much problem in Virginia, and all the gun people went up and did a big demonstration at the Capitol up, I think, in Richmond. Well, that a night or two when that was going on, Tucker Carlson had a West Virginia legislator on his show. And the guy goes, well, hey, any of you counties that want to join West Virginia, if you're in Virginia, just come on over. We'd love to have you. Okay, that's within the last couple of years, all right? Now, here's another option. You get that kind of penetration in a county, especially get the sheriff on your side, and you can start holding real common law grand juries with real people that have God-given rights and see if we can't put some teeth into those. Yeah, the lawlessness of their corrupt judiciary and all that, well, let's just start our own.
Well, Roger, There's a couple. I'd like to make two comments, and I think you're spot on. The lady that called in, I don't know if she is from Pennsylvania, Indiana, or Ohio, or whatever. She's been at this about 7 years or so.
Oh, you, Lauren? Lauren?
Yes.
Oh, she's a jewel.
Sharp, sharp lady.
Woo, and buddy.
Yes, sir. And I must say the same thing to Murr. She is one smart cookie. But with that said, you've mentioned a couple of times a fellow by the name of Dan Metter.
Yes.
I was not I was acquainted with him, but not well acquainted with him, but enough to know had Dan Metter lived, I think we'd be living in a different world today.
Well, he was, tell you, after the book was out, 2 weeks, 2 weeks to the day, I got two real important emails, okay, one day. And one of them was from a retired homicide detective in Naples, Florida. His name's Jim Prentice. I hope he's still with us. He was in bad health. And Jim had, when he was doing 20 years of homicide detective work, is when he stumbled into this. And he said, you know, Roger, one of you, he heard me say one day there's two separate books of law books in the law library. And he said, you know, I that's how I got into this. I discovered that when I was doing legal stuff, being a homicide detective, there's two sets of law books in the law library, see? And so after he retired, he got hooked up with Dan Metter. And he was one of his research team leaders, okay? Now, this is for the people in the audience. I'm going to repeat what he told me, all right? And he said, Roger, your book's a masterpiece. I've read it 10 times in 2 weeks and gotten something different out of it every time. That's pretty powerful coming from a guy like that. He also told me this. He said, we were all over what you're over. We just never thought of the affidavit.
Yep. Well, there was another fellow that contributed a lot to Dan Metter's knowledge that rarely gets any recognition, and I must say his name, and his name was Dennis Smith. And he was just an old farm kid, but he was quite a researcher and a smart, smart dude, and he worked hand-in-hand with Dan Metter.
I see. But what was his wife? Was his wife, Dan's wife's name was Kathy? So they're both gone. I can't remember, but I know he and his wife.
I think so. I think you're correct. But where I'm going with that, mentioning those names, is I'm in an area of northern Oklahoma that back in the day, Metter's day, this was a hotbed. And after Dan died, there were people started taking this on, and they were going off Hancocked and promising people they were going to get bukus of money if they filed a claim on this and claim on that.
Mm-mm.
And there's a number of people went to prison in this part of the country because of these misfilings, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And I must say this is one of the reasons that I'm proceeding with such caution on this is because I watched a lot of this happen. And but I think you're spot on. I'm in agreement with you. And I'm proceeding on. But I have a couple of questions.
Okay,
Carried a passport. I've carried a passport. I've used it once in the last, well, it's not the same one, but the last 20 years. I went into Canada with a friend of mine to close up his shop for the winter, and I tried to get it stamped going in, and I tried to get a stamp coming out, and they wouldn't do it.
No, they wouldn't do it. You know why?
Go ahead.
You only need a passport card. They don't have any facilities to stamp passport books because it's not considered like a foreign jurisdiction in the respect of other countries of the world because they're our neighbors. They passed this law in 2007. I can tell you because this is where that was the year that I decided to move to Argentina and went to get a passport for the first time and found the key to this thing in the passport application. Okay. And that summer of 2007 is when they changed the law, or the rule, if you will, bureaucratic rule, that you can't go to Canada
the Caribbean or to Mexico on a driver's license anymore. You got to have a passport card. And that delayed my passport application because all people that had vacation plans already all of a sudden had to have a passport card. And so the passport office was just jammed, all right? And it took a long time for me to get my passport, but that's why they didn't stamp your car, your visa book, is because they don't have visa stamps for Canada and the U.S. Now, if somebody comes from Ecuador and goes to Canada, they're going to get a visa stamp. But from the U.S. and back, it's not required.
Well, here's where I'm going with this. Why do I need a passport card? And please be brief, because I have a follow-up question to that.
All right. Well, you don't need one. You don't have. You don't need one unless you want one. And the reason that you would want one, I would think, is because even though you've got an existing passport that's still good, you do a renewal because, well, that's under your other legal personality. You didn't include an affidavit with that application. So the presumption is you're a citizen of the United States. That's why they got it rigged like it is, to steam you through there like cattle going to the slaughterhouse down in the narrow chute, okay? So what you want to do, even if you've got one open, is do a DS-82 and do a renewal, but only order a passport card, and this time include your affidavit, and they've got to recognize that because they tell you you can attach documentation. They got rules. I know people think they don't, but I promise you they do.
Okay, let me finish.
Okay. And you may very well have, and it depends on the designation. We've seen people with 09. There's a whole list inside the State Department of numerical designations. Okay. It's on the web. It's on the matrixdocs.com website. We finally posted it over there, so I didn't have to keep sending it to people. And so one of the identifiers is 09. I don't know if that's the one people get or not. Some do, some don't. But 09 is a U.S. national, and then at the bottom of the field where they describe that, it also has non-citizen national. They also have had, we've had reports of number 77. Well, that's an ambassador at large. We've also had reports, whatever the number is, of being a diplomatic courier. So what does that tell me? That tells me they've gone to great lengths to hide this. Would you agree with that, Joe?
Yes.
Okay. Now, do you think in the back office on the profiles that these people are looking at with all these little boxes and identifying different things, you think they got a box there that said, oh, hell, Joe caught us. He's a national. You think they're going to put that in front of the bureaucrats? They don't want anybody to know this. So that's why they have to hide it, see? That's why they've got the American Samoan non-citizen national. So they can hide national behind that one.
Well, see, I stopped at the post office the other day in Enid, Oklahoma, pretty good-sized post office.
I used to have some friends from Enid.
Yep. And I asked the person there about an application for a passport card. And she didn't know how to answer it, so she had to talk to the top dog, and he said, you need to take both forms, the DS-82 and the other one.
DS-11. Well, no, you don't. Okay. Well, even the authorized agents in the post office don't. If you go to the application, and this is a really interesting topic, that it brings up some interesting issues that I had to toy with years ago, okay? So if you've got an existing passport like you do, but you're applying as a different legal person, like you sound like you want to do.
Yes.
Do you go back and do the first time as a new legal person, or do you do the renewal, changing your status? I've got an answer for this, but I'm just giving you the setup because it's an interesting question.
Okay.
I think they do either one, really. All right. But here's the key. What's in the DS-11 that's also in the DS-82? The warning, you can attach documentation, including affidavits. It's in both. They don't require you to they don't require you to send a birth certificate in the second time. They don't require you to be in front of an administrating official or a judge the second time. And they don't even ask you the key question, are your mother and father citizens of the United States? They don't ask that in the renewal form, but they've got the warning box in there.
Now, well, because here's where we know, hold on, I'll finish. I'm going to turn it over to you. I'm sorry to keep stepping on you. But I'm trying to use these situations as a teaching moment, okay? We know now the big secret that this is the feudal system. If you understand the feudal system and its characteristic of voluntary servitude, you would know that you can volunteer out at any time, no matter what generation you're in. That's why the warning box is in the renewal. They don't want to put it in there. They got to.
Well, okay, on this DS-82, the renewal.
Yes, sir.
Which is what you, I understand you use to get a passport card.
Yes.
It says right at the top, can I use this form? And there are six questions.
Correct.
That they
ask
you.
That's new, by the way, relatively. Go ahead.
And if you answer no to any of these questions,
you go back to an 11.
And the one that I would answer no to is the U.S. passport book and or card that I'm renewing has not been mutilated, damaged, or reported lost or stolen.
Okay.
And it has not been, so I have to answer no. And then it says, if you answer no to any of the statements above, stop. You cannot use this form. You have to go to the DS-11 or whatever it is.
Okay. All right. Well, that's easy enough.
And start over.
Yeah, they're redesigning everything. They're redesigning these forms. I had not seen that until recently, by the way, Joe. I mean, it's not like I have a U.S. post office to drop by here in Ecuador, you know, and I don't go online. Ooh, I wonder if they've changed the form. Blinken and them are changing some of that. They're redesigning, and they're also in the process of redesigning the actual passport.
Okay.
Now, I did hear recently that they've got a pilot program, and you can go to travel.state.gov, and if you're doing a renewal, you can do it online. It's a pilot program. One of our listeners was telling us about it the other day.
Say that address again.
Travel.state.gov. That's the State Department's website. Travel.state.gov.
Okay.
And just put in the search field the passport renewal pilot program or something. I think it'll pop up for you.
Okay.
Now, in the application, they ask you, do you want a passport book, a passport card, or both?
Yep, both.
Yeah, well, you don't have to. If you've already got the reason you get a book is if you're traveling internationally outside of Canada, Mexico, and the Caribbean, because then you got to have that so that the countries can put their visa stamp on you to make sure you comply with their visa tourist requirements. You know, they're real strict on it here in Ecuador. They're very lax on it in Argentina. I'm illegal here now, and I was illegal in Argentina for like 8 of the 9 years I was there. I've never suffered any repercussions from it, okay? So, yep. But anyway, that's why you have the book, and then the passport cards for you to carry for your convenience or to go into Canada, Mexico, or the Caribbean. Sam is chomping at the bit to have a commercial break, I think. Weren't you?
Thank you for your time, Roger.
Well, you hang around, Joe. You got more questions? Hang around, man. Nobody else is in line, I don't think. Sam, play the break.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science, analyzing brawn. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. to you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.